Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. For over a century and a half, the German question has been hotly debated. During that time, Germany was at the center of two world wars and the Cold War. Now it appears Berlin is abandoning its post-Hitler policy of pacifism and non-intervention. And again, Russia is the enemy. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, Matthew Arrett in Montreal. He's a senior fellow at the American University in Moscow and director of the Rising Tide Foundation of Canada. In Munich, we have Ralph Niemeyer. He is chairman of the Council for Constitution and Sovereignty. And in Belgrade, we have Stephen Gajic. He is a research associate at Belgrade's Institute for European Studies. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to Ralph here first. Ralph, in my introduction, I don't want to be too extreme here, but it seems there's a major shift going on in German foreign policy since the end of the Cold War. And the pinnacle, and I think the most well-known foreign policy trajectory of Germany in the post-war years was Ostpolitik, specifically, which was meaning basically essentially having some form of reconciliation with the Soviet Union, then later Russia. That appears now to be completely off the agenda, since the foreign minister of Germany, Baerbock, says that we're at war with Russia. Thoughts?
Yeah, it is terrible what they are saying and also doing by committing to send arms into a conflict. It is actually a departure, as you just said. It's a departure from our post-1945 agreement with the world. We, as I always are banging on, we are not fully sovereign in this. I mean, the US Americans are still very active in Ramstein Air Base, and they do tell us what they want from us, actually. So it's not entirely the German decision. But I agree with you. It's a break with our post-World War II position in this. And I'm definitely opposing that, as many other Germans do. I mean, we want to have peace with everyone, and that's so clear. If you ask German population, 80 or 90% would immediately say, no, we don't want to have any war with nobody. Okay, we may want to defend human rights here and there. That's what we have done in Somalia and other places in Mali. At least that's what we were being told. But to go to Ukraine and send arms into a conflict and have a conflict with the Russian Federation, the majority of Germans will say no.
Well, let me go to Belgrade. Stephen, to make the point even more clear, when the unification of Germany was happening and the Soviet Union under Gorbachev gave it a green light, which surprised a lot of people because there were reservations in Western Europe, not in the East Europe. But there was as a declaration of a united Germany that Germany would be a force for peace and stability. It seems to me that they have walked away from that, okay? And then when we hear the German chancellor talk about remilitarization, a lot of people in the East are wondering, what did we agree to for the reunification of Germany? Go ahead, your thoughts.
Yeah, unfortunately, even during these first years after the Cold War, during Helmut Kohl and Mr. Genscher, Germany did destabilize the east of Europe, unfortunately, by recognizing at the time illegal accessions of Slovenia and Croatia from Yugoslavia. And I think that opened the Pandora's box. As far as for the German stance, it is becoming more and more clear to everybody what was clear maybe to certain people that were called lunatics, that Germany is an occupied country, that basically the four occupation zones eventually turned into two occupation zones, the Eastern and Western Germany. And then what happened with the fall of the Berlin Wall? All Germany was occupied by the Americans. And now we see that because I just want to remind you what, and I've mentioned this name so many times, I think I should get a scholarship for this guy or something, George Friedman, because he said repeatedly in 2014 and 15 that the Americans want what the Germans don't want. They want for the Germans to get armed turn their peaceful industry into military industry and go to the East. And what he explicitly said in Belgrade in 2014 was, if I was a German, I would never want that for my country, but I'm American. And the geopolitical goals of the United States are similar to those of Great Britain in the past. It is to confront the two most logical allies, which is Germany and Russia. And then again, what happened with the Nord Stream? I mean, I hear this really loud silence from Berlin. Nobody is asking about the serious investigation. While before this happened, we heard both Victoria Nuland and President Biden himself saying that more or less they were threatening that they will destroy the Nord Stream. Now it is destroyed and nobody is talking about it anymore.
Yeah. Matthew, in my first question to Ralph here, I talked about German unification. And the deal was, and we know this from the documents, is that, okay, a united Germany will be part of NATO, but not one a step further to the east. But it's really quite interesting is that the German question is again confronting us, because that was the first NATO expansion, was the unification of Germany. That set the precedent to keep moving further east. Go ahead, Matthew.
No, that's absolutely right. And that was, I think, in many ways, as the idea of the Pandora's box was already brought up, certainly the path towards our own annihilation, or Germany's sacrifice and annihilation, ultimately. And I think that Germany is, and many Germans and many politicians, though they're not loud enough, are beginning to speak up about the fact that they recognize that they're being set up as a sacrificial tool, in many ways very similar to the type of approach that was seen taken leading up to World War II. When, of course, you know, looking at the hidden history of World War II, we find the hand of Anglo and American industrialist banking behind the growth of the Hitler machine. Originally, the design was to just go straight on, destroy Russia and have them destroy each other. But ultimately, that was not what Hitler did. He did other things instead and broke from the script. That being said, it was still being manipulated by foreign forces. It wasn't a sovereign entity. And just like today, it's not a sovereign entity. And it's part of a broader program that involves the rehabilitation of Nazi history, pro-Nazi history that tries to paint Russia as a bad guy.
On that point, it's very interesting. Let me go to Ralph here, because, you know, we have Annalena Baerbock, who is the most militaristic and aggressive foreign minister since Ribbentrop. Okay, I'm glad Matthew brought this up here, because the supporting of Ukraine and the whole fake tank debate is that it's supporting a regime in Kiev that has Nazi and neo-Nazi fascistic elements to it. This is well known. This is not a hidden history here. This is a bad look for Germany, okay, considering what happened in the middle of the last century. Ralph.
Yes, exactly. Peter, and I agree with everyone here on this, what has been said. Now, Germany has broken the ceasefire of 9th of May 1945, because the 2+4 treaty, or it was called the Treaty of Settlement for Germany, it's not a peace treaty. So we are still stuck with the Potsdam Agreement from 1945, which is actually just a ceasefire agreement. And we have never had our full sovereignty since that time. So what is now happening, I mean, in the 2+4 treaty from 1990, allowing us to be unified, we promised that the united Germany would only have peace come from its soil. And it's very strict under Article 5 of the NATO treaty that we can only participate in military action to defend NATO territory, which Ukraine certainly is not yet. I say yet at this stage. And also, we are bound by the 2+4 treaty under international people's law that we only use our military according to the UN Charter Chapter 7, which did allow us to go to places where was a UN resolution. But for instance, in the Kosovo War, it was already not so. The Kosovo War has had no UN mandate, no resolution by the UN Security Council. So here we go. We have broken it now a second time after 1945. that we are becoming party in an armed conflict. And when people argue in my country that this is not, that we are not a party to the war because we only send arms and educate soldiers, no, no, it is. And it is prohibited by
what Germany is being set up to, and let's go to our guest in Belgrade, Stephen, is that, fighting Russia to the last Ukrainian. Are they throwing in the Germans now? Are the Germans also, the second tier? Because, what is the downside for the United States in all of this? Very little. Okay, actually, this is a conflict on the cheap in the broad scheme of things here. So sacrifice Ukraine to fight Russia, and the Germans are volunteering right behind the Ukrainians here. Go ahead, in Belgrade.
Exactly. I think that also there is a broader plan to sacrifice all of NATO's eastern members first. The Baltic states, unfortunately, many people are eager to go to war with Russia there. I don't know. This is really a very.
My friend, I lived in Poland for 10 years. I understand.
No, exactly.
I don't understand the mindset, but I recognize it. Keep going.
Exactly. That is one thing. And another thing. I'm happy that Lena Baerbock was mentioned here, because the Greens have something about going into war. Into war adventures, because it was Joschka Fischer in 1999. From the Green Party, leader at the time, who was the strongest advocate of bombing of the NATO aggression against Serbia and Montenegro, or Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, as it was called back then. I also would like to remind you, and actually to recommend everybody, there is a wonderful book and a movie. It is called in German, Er ist wieder da, Look Who's Back. And it is about Hitler waking up in 2014 in the middle of Berlin. The film is brilliant, but he says that he doesn't like the AfD, he doesn't like the neo-Nazis, he thinks they're all amateurs. The only party that he respects are the Greens. And I thought that the author probably knew something in advance. So now when we hear Annalena Baerbock saying that we are in war, now that the Greens are actually the greatest advocates of coal mining, they forgot about Greta and all the agenda from 2 years ago. We can see why the author of the film really had this in mind.
Well, it's very interesting, because it's the most hypocritical party in the world, maybe right after the Democratic Party in the United States here. But I mean, after decades of anti-war, I remember it in the 1980s. I mean, that was their signature thing. Okay, and then once they go into power, their whole green agenda seems to go to the wayside here. It's really quite remarkable. Gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Germany. Stay with RT.
At this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger. Food and medicines and supplies and freedom. 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 Freedom.
Там пулевое на вылет. Я делаю все для того, чтобы максимально обезопасить и довести их живыми. Поехали. Уходим, уходим, уходим.
Я запереживала, конечно, что нас засекли, что именно били, потому что мы там ходили. Но ребята говорят, нет, слава богу, а то они бы ложили бы. Обошлось.
Орудие!
Выстрел!
2014 году автобус с горловскими беженцами расстреляли, сожгли. Там были мои дети, но они чудом выжили. Ну вот, ну, любой бы на моем месте пошел бы, наверное.
Куда мы поможем?
Да.
А стой ты, стой. Давайте быстро.
Спасибо. Маленький, иди сюда, сынок.
Огневую позицию занять. Наводите. По цели готов. Поехали. Каждый раз получаю удовольствие, потому что с каждым моим выстрелом приближается время наших побед.
Конечно, страшно. Но я уже приняла решение. Я здесь. Бывает такое, что нервы сдают. Хочется поплакать. Нельзя это показывать. Мне нужно, чтобы ребята шли в бой с настроением, с сильным духом. Да, я рискую жизнью, но у меня есть цель. Если мы это сейчас не закончим, будет хуже. Мы должны победить.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the home edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. All right, let's go back to Montreal. Matthew, where's the issue of sovereignty here? Because, you know, Annalena Baerbock, the third time she's been mentioned in our gathering here. I mean, she seems to be the perfect creature of Washington. I mean, she's famously said just recently, she doesn't care what her voters think about, you know, Ukraine. She's going to decide herself here. I mean, obviously the social Democrats, the United States, the Anglo powers have never liked social Democrats in Germany. They don't like Ostpolitik, but Annalena Baerbock is the perfect Trojan horse for them, okay? And remarkably, she's in the Green Party here. And she seems very comfortable of having sovereign choices of her country made by others. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think the Croatian president made a very strong point when he said, I heard Baerbock announcing that we're all at war with, or that Germany wants to go to war with Russia. Well, good luck on that. It didn't look good the first time around. I hope it works out better, but it doesn't look good. And I think that overall, what is happening, if anything, on a positive side, is that the population is being pushed to the brink right now, where we need more of an activist population and more of an activist participation or intervention within the business and military community of people who recognize that they're about to not only repeat history, but now with nuclear weapons packed into the formula. So we have people like Sarah Wagenknecht, who's been doing some very interesting things and attracting a lot of support from both the right and the left alike, people who would normally never get together and have any common agreements on any single points, but are in accord that there is no voice. It is a vacuum of leadership calling for peace, and she's doing it, and calling for potentially setting up a new party around this idea as well. So far, the Die Linke party has been the only one to speak up against this war policy. But I think that this whole idea of having a disdain for populism makes Baerbock really a gem, a wet dream of a gem for technocratic managers who love to have these little detached, compassion-free puppets who are so ideologically committed to a certain worldview that they can't see and don't care about the pain that they're doing to real people.
You're bringing up a really good point, and let me go back to Ralph here. You're in Germany, you're in Munich. We hear the German chancellor talking about a form of remilitarization. His government keeps going over its own red lines, obviously in service of London and Washington here. But I mean, this remilitarization, what young German people want to go into a new Wehrmacht? I mean, does that exist? Because one of the things, a speech that the chancellor made recently, which got almost no coverage at all, But, you know, expanding NATO to the east, like with Moldova and Armenia, presumably those would be the troops, because the French don't want to get in the military. The Italians don't. The Germans don't. The Spaniards don't. The Portuguese don't. But maybe we can get these Moldovans to do it for us. Very much like Ukraine has taken on the martyr position of, you know, we're going to die for NATO. OK, I mean, I can hear the rhetoric and I see the pressure from Washington. But I mean, are there going to be hundreds of thousands of young German men and women that want to join the military?
No, definitely not. And I must say, it also would be absolutely illegal to do so. I mean, we have Article 26 of our basic law, which is the post-1945 Constitution, that prohibits us to go into any war and to participate in any war without defending our own territory or NATO territory. But of course, if you mentioned that we have NATO expand again into territories that are far beyond, then of course you would question who would go there and actually fight for that course. But I don't see in Germany any mood to go to war. I mean, well, the opinion polls always say 46 to 42% in favor or not in favor of sending some arms or helmets to Ukraine. Now, the tanks, it's already 48% who say no to that. So we are getting closer and closer that probably even more people would say, when it comes to fighter jets, that's the next step of escalation, that probably 60, 70% will immediately say no. They would refute that. At the moment, it's not a topic.
But Ralph, yet. I mean, to tell me and my guests and my audience here, does public opinion count in Germany?
No, it doesn't really. And that's the problem. That's why I'm banging on it and all the speeches that I'm giving here in Germany. And I draw more and more support, as it was just said, that Sarah Wagenknecht, she's also doing that. You know, we are the new peace movement now, and we attract more and more people from the center of politics, and rather not only the usual fringes of the far left and the far right. No, it is coming to the normal people in the streets who say, no, we don't want to have any war, especially not with Russia, because, I mean, people know what it would mean, and we don't want that. And I said recently in a speech, I said, Chancellor Scholz should stand in front of us and tell us about the consequences of what he's doing there. And if he's being carried again over a red tape that the mainstream media put there out for him to say yes to fighter jets, he should explain to us that, yes, this could mean also bombing of parts of Germany. And that is the result that we don't want to see.
Yeah, I mean, Stephen, you know, if we go all the way back to January of last year, did you have any idea that we'd be talking about this, you know, 10, 11 months later, talking about, you know, people preparing for the possibility of a conflict, a NATO-Russia conflict? Did that ever enter your mind 11 months ago?
Actually, it kind of did, I must say. Ever since 2014, if not even since 2008, after the Georgian conflict, we've seen this poker game while the West is constantly raising the stakes while Russia is following. Maybe this is actually quite risky from the Russian side, because it wasn't never proactive. It was actually even February 22, although this might sound crazy, was a reaction, because there was a buildup in eastern Ukraine. There was a Croatian Prime Minister Andrei Plenković, who said many times that they want to share their experience of basically expelling Serbs from today's Croatia, from Republic of Srpska Krajina in 95. It was repeatedly said, and they were giving practical knowledge to Ukrainians how to do that with Donbas. And once Russia, I mean, Russia is bad at PR, that, let's face it. Once Russia made the move in February, then all hell broke out as if this came out of nowhere.
Right.
Really, but coming back to Germany, I think that now London and Washington are trying to compensate some of the foreign policy. They're trying to give Germany some kind of a small reward. And this is the the German behavior, the German Frank behavior in the Balkans. Now France and Germany came with this so-called plan for Kosovo, which basically says that Serbia should recognize the illegal secession of Kosovo and Metohija, and by the way, say no to its closest ally at the Security Council, which is Russia, by imposing sanctions against Russia. So again, Germany is used as a tool, not of its own foreign policy, but of American foreign policy, while it is supposed to think that it is proactive in the Balkans if it is not proactive in the East, while it is constantly being bullied, not only by Washington and London, but also by Kiev and Warsaw and even the Baltic states. So this is really a very sorry scenario in which NATO, let's face it, London and Washington are reoccupying Europe, and not only Western Europe, because Western Europe is doing this reluctantly. I'm talking about Paris and Berlin, while Eastern Euros, like moonwalkers, are going into the fire.
The new axis is Washington, London,
Warsaw, and Kiev.
It's Washington, London, Warsaw, Kiev. That's it here. Matthew, I find it so disappointing, but I fully expected it, is that we have these elites, and this is obviously an elite agenda. It doesn't have deep popular support, but they're looking at victory, defeat. They're looking at it as a binary. And I want to go back to something that Ralph was saying, but they don't want peace. See, they want a military outcome. But if you were approach it discursively in a very, how can we get peace? Then that goes back to what the Russians proposed in December 2021, is saying we need a new European security architecture. And that is, I have very bad German, verboten. Go ahead, Matt.
No, absolutely. And that is absolutely what is needed. And it kindles the memory of the Rapallo Accords that were negotiated by Walter Rathenau in 1922 after World War II in response to the impossibility of paying the draconian or the impossible Versailles debt repayments. And Rathenau had very good relations with a network of diplomats within Russia, the newly formed Bolshevik Russia, that recognized, okay, we all need industrialization, we all need growth and development, we need win-win. The language of the text is very, very strong. You had the American president at the time, an enemy of the League of Nations, who was sabotaging that first attempt at a one-world government, Warren Harding, who later died of oysters, also making sure to settle bilateral treaties with Russia, with Germany, with Austria. So you had a whole network of pro-industrialist, pro-nationalist leaders a century ago, resisting this idea of a great reset of world civilization around this whole, you know, London-centered League of Nations operation, which I see a lot of parallels to what's being done today. And I think that Anatoly Anatov made the point that the real issue at stake right now is the fight over the multipolar system, which is coming online very quickly. And Germany being one of the most viable units in Europe that has a productive Mittelstand and a capacity to contribute actual works of productivity, construction, bridge building between East and West and North and South.
That goes back to the German question here. Ralph, we're almost out of time. Is the adage, keep the Russians out, the Germans down, and the Americans in? Is that the modus operandi? 15 seconds, go ahead.
Yeah, I do believe that, and you saw that with the bombing of the pipeline, that they can dictate to us how they want it. I was in the Chancellor's office a week before the bombing of the pipeline, said, please sign the Nord Stream 2 agreement. If you don't do it, I do it. He didn't do it, and then they bombed it. So someone must have rung up Washington and say, we got a problem here, and we have to get rid of that. That's the way it goes.
And the rest is history. But of course, it's one of those things that we'll never know because the people in power don't want any of us to know. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Montreal, Munich, and in Belgrade. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, cross that rules.